Vikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vikatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to break down some of the world's really influential, sometimes pretty dense sources into, well, pure knowledge for you.
And today, wow, we're tackling a big one. A real cornerstone of modern financial thinking.
We are. We're opening up Benjamin Graham and David Dodd's massive work, Security Analysis.
Yeah, you really can't talk about smart investing, intelligent investing, without starting right here. For you, the listener, if you're looking for that foundational mindset.
And the practical tools, too.
Exactly. The toolkit for making really disciplined financial choices, not just in stocks, but kind of everywhere in life.
Right.
Well, this book is basically the syllabus.
So our mission today with this deep dive is to slice through this, nearly 1,000-page book and pull out the really sharp, impactful ideas. What was their big goal, Graham and Dodds, when they first put this out?
Well, you have to remember the context. They were responding directly to a disaster, the crash of 29.
Right, the speculative bubble burst.
Totally. So they wrote this just after all that speculative frenzy of the 1920s led straight into the crash. Their goal was pretty profound, really. They wanted to bring rationality back. You know, impose it on the chaos.
Replace the gambling with something solid.
Yeah, replace that widespread emotional guesswork, that gambling, with rigorous financial analysis, disciplined valuation. And the ultimate aim, then and now, is the preservation of capital. Safety first, always.
Okay, so let's unpack the minds behind this philosophy a bit. Benjamin Graham, he's got this huge title, right? The father of value investing. What made his view so distinct?
Well, Graham was, a pioneer, an investment manager himself, a professor at Columbia. But the thing that really gave him authority was his direct experience. He actually lived through it.
He saw the crash unfold.
He managed money through the devastation of 29. Saw firsthand how reckless speculation just wiped people out, annihilated fortunes. So his focus on keeping capital safe, preserving it, wasn't just some academic idea. It was like a survival mechanism he learned the hard way.
That real-world experience is key, isn't it? He wasn't just teaching theory. He was teaching, financial survival skills. Risk aversion based on seeing the worst happen.
Exactly right. And then the other half of this partnership is David Dodd. Dodd brought something else critical to the table.
Okay, what was his role?
He provided the academic structure, the rigor. Graham had these brilliant, hard-won insights from the trenches, but Dodd helped organize them, systematically structure them into a comprehensive textbook that could actually be taught.
Ah, so it's that blend. Graham, the sort of visionary practitioner who saw the wreckage up close, and Dodd, the systematic academic who could codify it all, make it teachable. And they published in 1934, you said, a direct response, an intellectual antidote to that market failure.
Yeah, bridging that gap between Wall Street practice and academic theory. Pretty much forever after that.
Which brings us to the book's core idea, its thesis. They wanted to establish security analysis as a legitimate field? A structured discipline.
That's it. With consistent methods, real standards.
Yeah.
And the very first thing they do right out of the gate is draw that famous line in the sand. You know the one.
The big one. Investment versus speculation.
That's the absolute bedrock, the philosophical foundation for everything else in the book. They give you three really strict criteria for something to qualify as an investment.
Okay, what are they?
One, it has to be based on thorough analysis, really digging into the facts.
Makes sense.
Two, it has to promise safety of principle. You shouldn't expect to lose your initial stake.
Crucial.
And three, it must offer an adequate return. Not necessarily spectacular, but adequate.
Thorough analysis, safety of principle, adequate return.
Yep. And Graham is tough on this. He says if you're missing even one of those, just one, you're speculating. Doesn't matter what you call it, doesn't matter how fancy the asset is, you're speculating.
I find that really clarifying, actually, especially today with all the market hype you see. It's not about what you buy. It's about the how. The rigor of your process.
Exactly. And that process, it all revolves around this central concept of intrinsic value.
Ah, intrinsic value. The holy grail, maybe.
Sort of. It's like the hidden truth behind all the market noise and hype. It's trying to figure out what the company would really be worth if, say, the stock market just vanished tomorrow.
So it's true worth based on fundamentals.
Yes. determined through careful quantitative analysis, looking at assets, earnings, things like that, independent of whatever crazy price the market is quoting today.
Okay, so you figure out this value, or maybe, like they say, a conservative range for it.
Right, it's not usually one exact number.
And then you bring in that famous buffer, the thing that keeps you safe.
That's it, the margin of safety. This is the genius move, really. It replaces trying to be perfectly right with just needing the odds in your favor.
How does it work?
The core idea is simple. You buy a security for significantly less than that calculated intrinsic value, that discount, that gap between price and value. That's your margin of safety.
Your protection.
Exactly. It's your cushion against mistakes in your analysis or just bad luck or, you know, the market suddenly panicking. It's like your investor's insurance policy built right into the price you pay.
Okay, let's break down how they build this intellectual fortress. They structure the analysis quite defensively, don't they? I kind of lays that philosophical groundwork, really focusing on justifying that intrinsic value range.
Yeah, they hammer home that the analyst isn't supposed to be a fortune teller. Intrinsic value isn't some precise number you pull out of a hat. It's an estimated range, and importantly, it has to be conservative.
Based on facts.
Based on known facts. Existing assets, demonstrated earning power over time. The analyst's job is reactive, almost. Justify the value based on what we already know. Don't try to predict the unknowable future.
And they acknowledge that the market price is often, well, emotional.
Right.
Driven by mass psychology, fear, euphoria.
Totally. Which is why price often diverges, sometimes wildly, from that fundamental intrinsic value.
And that gap, that divergence.
That's exactly where the disciplined, rational investor finds their opportunity when the market gets it wrong.
Okay, moving into parts 2 and 3. That safety-first idea really comes to the forefront. They start with analyzing fixed-income securities, like bonds. Graham calls this a negative art.
Yeah, negative art. It sounds a bit odd, doesn't it?
It does. What does he mean? Are we looking for something that isn't there?
Pretty much. When you analyze a bond, your main goal isn't finding the absolute highest return possible. Your primary job is to eliminate the worst possible outcome.
Which is default, the company not paying you back.
It's exactly, default. So it's analysis by elimination. You're basically screening companies, trying to make absolutely sure the issuer is strong enough, stable enough to not default. Your first job is avoiding catastrophe.
So the number one metric isn't yield, it's risk assessment. What's the key quantitative test they use for this?
The big one is the earnings coverage ratio. Mm-hmm. It's simple but powerful. How many times over do the company's current earnings cover its mandatory interest payments?
Okay. So if earnings are, say, 10 times the interest payments.
You've got a massive cushion, a huge margin of safety on the debt side. They also warn you to be really skeptical about hybrid securities, things like convertible bonds.
Why is that?
Because they often kind of trick investors. You might be taking on equity-like risks, but without the full equity upside, or bond-like risks without full bond protection. Graham and Dodd basically say, only touch them if the straight bond part is attractive all by itself. Don't get seduced by the conversion feature.
Okay, so secure the foundation with safe bonds first. Then we move to the common stock toolkit, which is part 4. Here, they say the anchors for valuation are strictly earning power and asset value, not forecasts or hype.
Right. This is where the value investing engine really starts humming. And they detail 2 main ways to value stocks that are still super relevant. First is valuation by assets.
And this leads to that almost mythical strategy, the ultra-conservative net-net approach.
Yeah, the net-net. It's the ultimate security blanket, conceptually at least.
Yeah.
A net-net strategy means buying a stock for less than its net current assets.
Explain that. Net current assets.
It means you take the current assets, things like cash, receivables, inventory, and you subtract all the liabilities short-term and long-term, everything the company owes.
Okay.
If the stock price is below that number, you're theoretically buying the company for less than the liquidation value of its most liquid parts.
Yeah.
You're essentially getting the ongoing business, the factories, the brand, everything else for free, or even less than free.
Wow. It's hard to lose money if you buy something for less than nothing.
That's the idea. Incredible protection. Now, that's often for a distressed situation.
Yeah.
The second method is more broadly applicable. Valuation by earning power. How do you anchor intrinsic value using earnings?
This feels more common.
It is. First, you absolutely have to figure out a normalized or average earnings figure. Graham suggested averaging earnings over, say, 7 to 10 years.
Why so long?
To smooth things out.
Yeah.
Business goes in cycles, right? Booms and busts. Averaging over a long period helps you see the underlying sustainable earning power, not just a snapshot from a peak year or a trough year.
Yeah.
It's like measuring a runner's pace over the whole marathon, not just their final sprint.
Right. You're finding the durable reality, not just the current mood.
Exactly. Then you take that normalized earnings number and you capitalize it. That means applying a reasonable, conservative price to earnings, or PE ratio to it. That gives you an estimate of intrinsic value based on demonstrated earning capacity, not just short-term hope or hype.
That disciplined, backward-looking approach, it leads right into parts V and 6, doesn't it? Where they talk about financial statement analysis as detective work.
Oh, yeah. Graham really stresses this. You cannot just take financial statements at face value. The analyst must be a financial detective.
A detective looking for what? Hidden clues? Misdirection?
Kind of. You're looking for how the company might be, let's say, managing its earnings. Are they maybe fudging the numbers a bit? Not necessarily illegally, but using accounting choices to make things look better than they are. You can't just trust that bottom line reported earnings number.
So what specifically is the detective looking for to get to that sustainable earning power?
Well, you have to adjust the reported earnings. Dig into the footnotes. Look closely at their depreciation policies. Are they realistic? And crucially, look at inventory accounting, LIFO versus FIFO.
Ah, last in, first out versus first in, first out. Why does that matter so much?
Because during periods of inflation, switching between LIFO and FIFO, or just using one versus the other, can significantly inflate or deflate reported profits without any real change in the underlying business.
Right.
It's a classic, perfectly legal way to manage earnings. Graham trains you to spot that kind of accounting smokescreen and see the real operational cash flow underneath.
That ability to see past the accounting choices, that's huge. And they apply similar scrutiny to the balance sheet, too.
Absolutely. You have to analyze working capital, the short-term assets and liabilities, and the company's debt levels, its debt capacity. Assess the overall financial health and flexibility. Again, they prioritize companies with strong balance sheets, conservative accounting, because the number one goal is always
preservation of capital, not chasing the highest possible return.
You got it. Safety over speculation.
That intense rigor, it informs these big enduring themes that make the book so timeless. Let's talk about those. Maybe start with that famous analogy, the one that helps build emotional strength. Mr. Market. The market as a manic depressive partner.
Yeah, Mr. Market. It's such a powerful idea. The radical message here is that the market is your servant, not your guide, not your master.
How so?
Graham paints this picture of the market as this business partner, Mr. Market, who shows up every single day. And every day he offers to either buy your share of the business from you or sell you his share. The catch is, his price quotes are driven by wild mood swings. Some days he's euphoric and quotes a crazy high price. Other days he's deeply depressed and offers a ridiculously low one.
And the rational investor.
The rational investor is free to completely ignore him, or even better, take advantage of him. You use his quotes only when they serve your purpose, based on your analysis of the business's value. You don't let his moods dictate your actions.
Because, as the other famous quote goes, in the short run, the market is a voting machine, reflecting popularity and emotion.
But in the long run, it is a weighing machine.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, reality asserts itself. The market price tends to gravitate towards the underlying value, the weight of the business.
So, Mr. Market provides the emotional anchor. It lets you stay disciplined. When he's panicking and offering lowball prices, that's your chance to buy cheap.
Right. And when he's deliriously optimistic and offering sky-high prices, maybe that's your chance to sell. You trade based on value, not on Mr. Market's emotional roller coaster.
Okay, theme two. This feels like the absolute backbone of the whole thing. The margin of safety is central.
It really is. It's the buffer, the protection against being wrong, or just against bad stuff happening that you couldn't predict. Analytical errors, unexpected downturns, sheer bad luck.
You're protected because you bought it cheap enough in the first place.
Exactly. Because you bought the asset for significantly less than your conservative estimate of its real value. That discount is the margin of safety.
It really changes the nature of the game, doesn't it? It shifts investing away from needing like surgical precision, getting the intrinsic value exactly right, to just needing favorable odds. You just need enough of a cushion.
Precisely. You don't have to predict the future perfectly if you have a large margin of safety. And finally, theme three, quantitative analysis over market sentiment. This is the discipline in action.
Meaning?
Meaning that systematic, verifiable analysis of the financial data, the numbers, the balance sheet, the earnings history, is fundamentally superior to relying on gut feelings, hot tips, or just chasing whatever trend is popular this week.
Skepticism towards the crowd is essential.
Very much so. The focus stays locked on those conservative financial practices, predictable business models, strong balance sheets. That structure, that rigorous process, is what elevates investing from just a gamble into a, well, a structured profession.
You know, the book is also just full of incredibly memorable lines, these little nuggets of wisdom that really stick.
It really is. Distillations of deep thinking into sharp phrases.
Let's pull out a few of those key quotes, the ones that really capture the essence. We already touched on the first, but it's worth repeating because it's so central to understanding market behavior. In the short run, the market is a voting machine, but in the long run, it is a weighing machine.
Yeah, that perfectly frames the investor's opportunity, doesn't it? You can exploit the short-term noise, the volatility from the voting, but you ultimately rely on the long-term weighing the underlying value asserting itself.
Okay, another one that directly hits that need for price discipline. The margin of safety is always dependent on the price paid.
Crucial. It hammers home that valuation is everything. The exact same company, the same stock, can be a wild speculation if you pay too much. Or it can be a sound investment if you manage to buy it at a significant discount to its value. Price dictates safety.
And I love their stance against trying to be a crystal ball gazer. They tell the analyst, analysis should be penetrating, not prophetic.
Right. Your job is to understand the present reality of the business deeply. Penetrate the numbers, understand the operations, the balance sheet, the earnings history. The facts you can know. Don't waste your energy trying to predict unknowable future events like interest rates or election outcomes or what the economy will do next year. Focus on the knowable.
And one last one, a really timeless warning for anyone tempted to chase the next big growth story. Obvious prospects for physical growth in a business do not translate into obvious profits for investors.
Ooh, that's a good one. And so relevant today. Growth is great, but it always, always has to be judged relative to the price you pay for it.
Meaning,
if everyone already knows about the great growth prospects, chances are the market has already priced that growth in, probably excessively. You might be paying a huge premium for that promised future growth. That's speculation on a perfect outcome. Graham constantly reminds us that fantastic operational growth often goes hand in hand with fantastic price growth, which can completely eliminate the potential profit for someone buying in late.
So how do we bring all this wisdom, these principles from, what, the 1930s into our lives today? What are the practical takeaways for you, the listener?
I think the biggest one is just the mindset shift it forces.
Yeah. How so?
Seeing stocks not as blinking tickers on a screen, but as actual ownership pieces in real businesses.
Ah, yes. That immediately brings a different kind of discipline, doesn't it? A long-term perspective. You start asking yourself different questions, like, if I had the money, would I want to buy this entire company, the factory, the brand, the debt, everything at this total market price?
That's a much more serious question than will this stock go up tomorrow?
Exactly. And for you, the learner, the direct practical application is building real financial literacy. This framework forces you to learn how to actually read an annual report, how to scrutinize it, assess the debt load, calculate basic profitability metrics, look for those accounting red flags we talked about.
It demystifies the financial world. It does. And importantly, these ideas aren't just for stocks. You can apply the core principles intrinsic value, margin of safety, to almost any major asset decision you make.
Like what?
Well, buying a house, for example. Or maybe investing in a small local business or franchise. Even negotiating a long-term contract. You should always be asking, what's the underlying value here? And am I paying a price that gives me sufficient protection if things don't go exactly as planned? Is there a margin of safety?
That idea of protection against the unforeseen, and ultimately, maybe the most valuable application is emotional control.
Absolutely. This whole framework, it anchors your decisions in rational calculation, in analysis. And that is the perfect antidote to the fear and greed that run rampant when markets get volatile or uncertain. It helps you stay disciplined when everyone else is losing their minds.
So wrapping this up, what's the final takeaway for you? What really stands out?
For me, I think the most empowering lesson is simply that successful investing isn't some secret art reserved for geniuses or the incredibly lucky. It's a discipline. It can be learned.
Right. It requires work, but it's accessible.
Exactly. And what really endures, what makes Graham and Dodd still so vital, is their insistence on the need for both things. Technical competence, doing the hard work of rigorous analysis and emotional discipline, having the patience, the independence of thought, to ignore the market's noise and stick to your analysis.
It really is kind of a manifesto for rational decision-making, especially when things feel uncertain. And what surprised me, honestly, is just how relevant, how needed these nearly century-old ideas feel right now. In today's often very speculative markets, the principles haven't aged.
They really haven't. It's timeless wisdom for navigating financial life.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summaries is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.